How do we make the shift from conflict to cooperation? This audio is about a collaborative approach to difficult decision-making, to arguments and strained relationships. How do we replace victory versus defeat with building partnerships for solving mutual problems together? That's what this first skill, win-win, opponents or partners, is about. It's from the book Everyone Can Win on handling conflict constructively. This approach to conflict resolution is all about heart. It's about wanting the best for all concerned. It's about committing to fixing our behavior whenever we've stopped caring, firstly about ourselves, but also caring about each other. And it goes deeper. If we're not considering the needs of our communities, other nations, or even our environment, we've got something to fix within ourselves. And we'll need a whole toolkit of conflict resolution skills to do that well. In a conflict resolution network, we've worked over many years with people in conflict in all walks of life. Distilling that experience, we've sifted out 12 skills that give practical support to people who choose a collaborative rather than an oppositional approach. And this talk's dealing with the first one, win-win, opponents or partners. We'll dive deep into the others as we move through the series. So, let's get started. First, assess your conflict clues. Building a partnership or solving mutual problems together is definitely helped by being very clear about what's going on. That is, what level your current conflict is actually at. We'll start with the small stuff. Much easier to start with the small stuff when you're trying to teach yourself a new skill. So the first level of conflict, the first conflict clue you might have, is discomfort. Discomfort's an intuitive feeling that something's wrong, even if you can't quite put your finger on it. Was it a tone of voice or some body language? Is it your problem anyway? Ask yourself, is there something I could do about this now? Your task here is to get your questions answered without making a fuss. It might be as simple as, are you okay? Or, are we okay? And at other times, there might be nothing to do except stay alert and observe. You want the relationship to stay strong, so don't dismiss your feelings, but also remember, don't make a mountain out of a molehill. Your next level of conflict clues is an incident. The clue to an incident is usually a minor one. Some apparently trivial thing happens, but it leaves you feeling rather upset or irritated for a while, and then forgotten until the next time. Better not make a fuss as often the thought at that time. But these little incidents keep simmering in the background. In itself, an incident is a simple problem. But if you read it badly, the relationship's taken a bit of a dent, and a little problem can grow into a big problem. What's your task here? Well, don't put it aside. Clear it up now. Get to know each other better and have a laugh about it if you can. Make the understanding between you deeper. Close the gap rather than widen it. Your next level of conflict clues is misunderstanding. And people often misunderstand each other without knowing it. They assume things about a situation, usually because the other person wasn't clear or the climate between you both isn't warm enough. Sometimes misunderstanding arises because the situation raises a touchy issue for someone. Your thoughts are likely to keep returning to the same problem. So your tasks. You might open a discussion to fix these misperceptions using the skills you're learning here, or you might need a little bit of help from someone else. Goodwill is essential. You don't want it to move to the next level, which is tension. Tension is an obvious clue there's a conflict. Your attention distorts your perception of another person and most of what they do. The relationship is weighed down with negative attitudes and fixed opinions. You'll hear, or use yourself, lots of talk peppered with "they always" or "you never." The way you feel about the other person or the group has become quite toxic. People dwell on the issues, and mind chatter runs riot, even when they're actually saying nothing. A couple sitting at their dinner table, and he says, "Pass the salt." And she snaps back, "So you don't like my cooking anymore?" It's the signal that there's a much bigger problem, a tense situation like dry brush just waiting for a spark to set it alight. Your task? It's a big job. Really deep and meaningful conversations that revisit the big issues are needed, and perhaps with some help of an outsider to steer the process. And an intervention can work if people want it and they're willing to be open and to work hard. The most dramatic level of conflict we call crisis. A crisis can't be missed. When someone walks out of a relationship or a job, it's plain there's been serious unresolved conflict. Violence is too late. Things are out of control and should have someone from outside the relationship intervene, though of course it doesn't always happen. Beware of well-meaning interventions that can go wrong. Vicious arguing with people screaming abuse at each other is also a loss of control. Whether violent or not, it's a crisis. When normal behaviour goes out the window, people think about extreme gestures, and they sometimes do them. Things end, jobs, friendships, marriages. Health and safety can be an issue. External and skillful intervention may be needed. Crisis professionals, legal, social, medical, and welfare all have a place here. Your task? Restore everyone's self-control right now. And if that's impossible, get out and get help. The lesson from all this is to pay attention to early conflict clues. Watch out for those discomforts and small incidents. Don't ignore them. Deal with them before the emotions are running high. Once that's your habit, most situations won't build towards misunderstanding, tension, or crisis because you're constantly working on improving the relationship. So take a moment, ask yourself, is this something I can easily let go of, or would it be wiser to get it out in the open? Does it have other implications? And if so, look for an opportunity to start a constructive conversation. You'll need your kit of conflict resolution skills. So here's the first one. Win-win. Opponents or partners? The win-win approach to conflict doesn't come naturally to everyone. We may not have seen it demonstrated in our childhood. It's a learnt response to say to ourselves, I want to win, but not at your expense. I want to find a better way. Instead, as soon as we're in conflict or see one looming, we often read the situation as, I'm under attack, and revert to a knee-jerk reaction. Something's triggered in that primitive animal part of our brains. One of our pre-wired survival defense mechanisms kicks in. It's fight, flight, or freeze. Perhaps someone appears to be taking advantage of us, ignores our wishes, makes us look stupid, or is just plain mean. Can you recall a situation when you felt threatened? How did you handle it? Did you fight back, explode, shout, intimidate, interrupt? Maybe you insisted that you were right and kept trying to explain your point. Did you tell them how they ought to behave, or nag, or issue ultimatums? You'd do it or else. Maybe you made some sarcastic comments, or worked out how to get even. But perhaps that's not your usual style of reaction. Perhaps you tend to retreat into flight mode, run out the door or hope the problem will go away if you say nothing. Tell yourself it doesn't matter anyway, but then get depressed. Do you hold back your own opinions to prevent more conflict, or get cranky, do nothing about the problem itself, but take it out later on the wrong person? If we physically or emotionally withdraw from a conflict, we're safe from potential danger and we've avoided our fear of speaking up for ourselves. Flight mode's smart when conflict's unpredictable, violent, or when it's none of our business. And sometimes it's better to back off and give the other person some space to rethink the situation. But there is a big downside. We no longer have a say in what happens next, and the problem might just get worse and worse. Your silence might silence your potential supporters. They're presuming you don't care, while the other person has won at your expense, and the opportunity's been missed to talk it through and find a workable solution. Perhaps we're withdrawing to punish the person, or we might use it as a subtle whip to force them to change their mind. We hold back on love or contact, whether we're fully aware of that or not. And we might win this round that way, but we're causing long-term damage. That's how relationships grow cold. So we could fight, we could use flight, but we're also wired with a third survival mechanism. It was very useful to our ancestors when they needed to escape notice. Like a rabbit caught in a spotlight, we might freeze. And in modern society, we still engage it. We wear a tight smile and we go silent, so silent that we can't even think what to say. We tread oh so carefully so as not to arouse their anger. We freeze if we need peace at any cost. It might be sensible when a confrontation over a slight disagreement puts too much pressure on the relationship, or when people are not ready to hear what we've got to say. Sometimes you can preserve a relationship by using tact over brutal honesty, and some conflicts even dissolve just because we stay friendly. However, it gets less than helpful if you accept physical or verbal abuse and don't stand up for yourself. Anything for peace can be dangerous. We perpetuate the problem when we deny there is a problem. How can we move beyond immediate reaction? Fight, flight, and freeze are our three hardwired emergency mechanisms and all useful from time to time, but they needn't rule us. There's a brief space between stimulus and our reply, and there we can quickly call up better strategies to turn ourselves and the situation around. We want to respond rather than just react. Whenever we're about to engage in a difficult conversation, it helps to take a moment to ask ourselves, what's happening in my body, my emotions and my thoughts, so that we can modify those initial reactions. Keep calm. Take a deep breath. If your tummy's in knots, put your hands on your belly. Adjust your stance. Stand strong, stable, and flexible. And only then carry on. Well, not before you do one more thing. Center yourself. It's a very powerful technique that comes to us from the martial arts. Centering's about bringing yourself back into balance. Just as potters center their ball of clay on their wheel so it doesn't spin out of control, our point of balance is our center. Where is it? Well, it's a little below our navel, but inside, about halfway between your spine and the skin of your stomach. Centering means just this. Bring your attention to that spot. Try it now. Use your breath as well. Take your breath and attention to that midway point. Can you experience your body relaxing? Can you feel some physical tension dropping away? Centering begins at the level of body, but it immediately calms distressing thoughts and runaway emotions too. Getting centered is very powerful. In the midst of conflict, it's the quiet spot in the eye of the storm. It gives you the space to edit your initial reaction and to respond. and it only takes a moment. No one can even see you doing it. You just choose to be centered, focus on your belly, and then turn your attention to whatever it is that you are doing. If you sense an emotion, then just name it quickly for yourself. Get things back into perspective with, is this a mistake? Did they mean that? What are they really trying to say? Go back to your center. You're taking charge of yourself. Perhaps if the other person has lost control of their anger, your reactions of fight, flight, and freeze might be overtaking you too. If so, do you need a little more time to calm down? And you can say, I don't think I can continue this right now, but I want to discuss it. Let's make another time. Well, I'd call that a tactical withdrawal, not in the same ballpark as reactive flight. We're withdrawing to get centered so we can attend to the conflict more calmly and turn it towards solutions that work better for everyone. You'll let go of fight, flight, and freeze. You're beginning to practice a fourth way. We like to call it flow. The intent behind the martial art of Aikido is all about flow and how to direct the energy away from causing harm or being caused harm. The expert canoeist does something pretty similar by flowing with the course of the rapids, but steering powerfully around the dangerous boulders in the river. Flow in verbal conflict also relies on this intent. If you flow with the movement of the energy, you won't rigidly oppose the other person. You'll use your strength to direct their energy away from causing harm and towards solution. You might need to calm their emotions by really listening. You can help the other person say what they do want rather than what they don't want. And you'll put your case so that it shouldn't inflame them further. Each step you take supports the conversation in flowing more smoothly and in the right direction. And now you are choosing how you're responding. What does flow feel like? Well, we're flexible, but we're relatively effortless. We're able to respond immediately to each changing circumstance. Bit like tree branches swaying in the wind. We're very present, right here, right now. Our awareness is incredibly concentrated on exactly what's going on. You might know that feeling if you're absolutely engrossed in a work project. But when our emotions are aroused in conflict, of course, flow isn't quite so effortless. It's hard work, and it is a learned skill. Sometimes we're going to trip up. Everyone does. But all we can do is to get back on track as soon as possible. Flow's not about backing down, but it's non-combative. It disarms the attack, theirs and yours. Flow requires courage. We have to trust the process of communication and our ability to steer the conversation around the obstacles and sway with the wind of other people's emotions and respond appropriately to each moment. Flow requires heart. It works for all people in the situation, negotiating what's best for everyone. We start that caring connection by consciously committing ourselves to a win-win strategy. So what's involved? I want to win. And I want you to win too. I'm treating you as my partner in problem solving rather than my opponent. You commit yourself to work with the other person collaboratively. It's not a competition, and you hold firmly to that commitment, even if the other person's not playing by those rules. To grasp the basic principles, let's take a very simple example. You're in the kitchen with the person you live with, and you both want the one and only orange in the fruit bowl. That's your initial position. And it happens also to be theirs, so you're in conflict. What should you do? You could toss a coin. You could decide who needs it the most. Perhaps you decide you'll cut it in half. Well, that might be an acceptable compromise, but jumping at a compromise often turns out to be something less than the best solution. So before you argue or jump to what might well be a lesser solution, back off your position and explore the needs behind the problem. Find out what are the major needs and concerns of the people involved. Ask why the other person needs what they say they want, and examine why you're needing what you say you want, and have this conversation as soon as you can. So let's return to the kitchen to have it. And you say, "I'm thirsty, I want to make juice. What do you want the orange for?" And the other person says, "I'm baking a cake, I want the rind." When you consider what each person needs, you'll often find that people are apparently wanting the same thing, but they actually want to achieve quite different results. And this can open up possibilities for some creative thinking. It may not be possible for each of you to have your initial position, having the whole orange, but it might be possible for each of you to satisfy your underlying needs. It's essential research. Do it first, and only then start to design some new options. You're looking for new options where everybody's going to get more of what they want. When one of you wants the juice and the other one wants the rind, well, the answer is obvious. And sometimes win-win solutions can be that easy, and sometimes they're not. Back to our example. Suppose it isn't so straightforward, and you're both after the juice because you're both thirsty. What are the options then? Well, sharing the juice is the obvious compromise, but if you're really investing in a collaborative approach and you're responding with conscious skill, you'll look further. You'll try to find a way to satisfy both people. You flow with the other person and explore whatever ingenious options you can come up with together. Maybe you just need more to go around. You could make a smoothie with the orange and add some extra fruits, or find one of you something else to drink. You could even work up a conflict prevention strategy for the future. Knowing that you'll both reach for oranges when you're thirsty, you could buy more oranges the next time you shop. It's a simple example, but it has elements of deeper principles. We're often asked, is win-win about the process or the outcome? Well, the short answer is it's about the process. It does not and it cannot define the end result. What it defines is how we'll travel, aiming for mutually beneficial outcomes and the best possible under the circumstances. It's certainly about a process where we want to find a win for everyone, but there won't always be a clear win for each person. Win-win is about the approach we've used. Have all needs been considered? All options been explored, and the solution being chosen which meets more major needs than any other? And have the relevant people been part of the process? There's a huge benefit in doing it together. Of course, you can on your own back off your stance of wanting the whole orange, analyze both people's underlying needs, and then design a new option. But the win-win approach is much more powerful if you work it out together. If you collaborate. Firstly, more ideas means more creative solutions. And secondly, you're clear that you're treating the other person as a partner. And they'll see the process as fair. You're inviting their contributions. If the other person is hard to budge, you might try, "I'm here to solve problems. Can we work out something that's fair?" When we both agree on the best option, the relationship is at least maintained. But at best, you're going to improve the climate between you of mutual trust and respect. If you sense there's a conflict, drop your oppositional approach. And sometimes that's hard because we love being right, and we'll prove it by making the other person wrong. And the conflict quickly becomes your way or my way, this or that. And the other person becomes our opponent as we push for and defend our point. Well, that's lots of fun on the sports field, but it's not fun anywhere else. Try to be objective and separate the problem from the personalities. Striving to be better gives us goals to achieve, but striving to destroy an opponent can be vicious and dehumanizing. And we see it all the time in public debate, in Parliament, and in our court system. It's a competition and not a very productive one. Cutthroat competition in the workplace produces poisonous working atmospheres and promotes mediocrity in decision-making. Right versus wrong, true versus false, winners versus losers can make for some very nasty arguments. And we may end up right, but at what cost? Did I allow the space for a better idea to emerge? Did I destroy a relationship? Here's one of the most useful skills you can employ, and we just call it and, not but. Treat an opposing idea as just different ways of seeing things. It's adding a new perspective as you both search for good answers. I understand that you see it this way. And the way I see it is, banish but from your conflict vocabulary, even though it's often how we speak. Weed out the but. If it comes in by mistake, immediately correct it. All points of view actually add to the full picture, so don't dismiss them. And this includes the doubts in your own mind. Don't dismiss them either. I'd like to raise this with him, but I'm worried that I'll be making a fuss. Change that to, I'd like to raise this with him, and I'll need to do it so that I won't look like I'm making a fuss. Include the other person's doubts similarly. You say, I think we should move our factory to a cheaper suburb. The rent would be much more reasonable. And the other person dismisses that idea with, oh, we can't do that. We'll lose staff if we move out of this area. Use your and, not but. Right, you say. We could really do with cheaper rent, and we don't want to lose staff. You're pointing out a direction for creative problem solving. You include rather than dismiss the objection. Also, keep sprinkling words like we both rather than you or me. Try discuss rather than argue. As well as dropping but, drop the word disagree. Instead, you might say, I see it differently. You're not contradicting. You're adding your point of view to what's going in the pot. You're being hard on the problem and soft on the people. Here's Hannah's story. Hannah came to our workshop because she had a really annoying problem with one of the members of her team, Nina. Nina had joined them 2 years ago, and Hannah really appreciated the quality of her work. But nonetheless, Hannah was at her wit's end with her. Nina would interrupt her at least 6 or 8 times every day, asking how to proceed or giving Hannah some new piece of information that she really didn't need just then. At the beginning, Hannah had said nothing, hoping that Nina would become less dependent as she got more familiar with the job. But the interruptions went on. And then she tried to drop some subtle hints. She started taking a long moment before she looked up from her work when Nina walked into the room, and that failed too. And then one afternoon, Hannah lost it and she snapped at Nina. Well, she knew she'd better find a better way when she saw the very hurt look on Nina's face. How could she fix this with a collaborative approach? She had to reduce Nina's demands on her time and still keep her happy and productive. So, using the conflict resolution skills she'd learned, Hannah opened up the conversation. First, she let Nina know how much she valued her as a member of the team, which was very true. And then she went on to explain that she needed to find a way to organise the demands on her own time and that she wanted to come up with a plan that would work well for Nina too. And Nina was happy to problem solve with Hannah. In fact, she seemed to be empowered by being asked to help. Together, they brainstormed some procedures which would mean that Nina didn't have to call on Hannah so frequently. They also agreed on how often and over what things Nina would still come for Hannah's advice. Their new methods were fair for both of them, and as Nina had been involved in creating the plan, she was committed to it and happy. Hannah was delighted, and she was busting to tell me about it when we next met. She said their new arrangement was actually working much better for both of them. So what's your win-win process going to look like? You'll step back off opposing solutions, involve the relevant people, define everyone's needs, look for creative and ingenious solutions, and try to meet as many needs as you can, something for everyone. Support their values too, as well as your own. Concentrate on fairness, not pressure. Try to be objective and separate the problem from the personalities. Be hard on the problem and soft on the people. You will, however, find yourself at times with some huge win-win challenges. You'll be tested to your limit. Other people's behaviour might be impossible for you to put up with. They may distrust you. They may be too attached to what they say they want to even listen to you. What can you do? You can continue to hold in your heart their best interests and your own, whether or not they're noticing that and whether or not they're cooperating in the process. Let's run through some examples. What about a friend who never reciprocates favours or colleagues who don't pull their weight? Emphasize shared goals. Try telling them something like this: I want to stay friends, and I find that hard to manage when I don't feel there's equal give and take. Or, I want to continue working with you, and I need to know that you're matching me with the workload. What about if you've been trading with another business, but now it seems to have struck financial difficulties? Be creative in responding to their needs. You might say, we can only continue to supply you on a COD basis, but we could offer you smaller and more frequent deliveries if that suits you. Let's suppose you're in direct competition with others for the same position. You may have to redefine what a positive outcome is for you. Try to stop worrying about the other person and concentrate on yourself. Getting that position may or may not be the best thing for you. If the situation demands competition, use it as your incentive to bring out your personal best. I love this story from Joe Hyam's book, Zen in the Martial Arts. Seems to demonstrate the point. In sparring practice, a martial arts student was being constantly overwhelmed by a more skillful opponent. He was upset and he went to his teacher for advice. The teacher considered the issue and then drew a chalk line on the floor about 2 meters long. How can you make that line shorter? The teacher asked. The student studied the line and made several suggestions, including rubbing out bits of it. The teacher shook his head with each one, and then he drew a second line longer than the first. How does the first line look now? Well, said the student, it looks shorter. And the teacher nodded. It's always better to improve your own game than trying to diminish your opponent. If you tackle competition by developing yourself, you'll grow in dignity and strength, regardless of the outcome this time round. Let's go on a bit further with some of these win-win challenges that you're liable to face. What about someone who just won't cooperate? Say you and your sister are arguing over a relative's will. Things have become very nasty, and she won't cooperate in working out a fair solution. No matter how difficult it is, leave a corner for her in your affections. Don't put up with insults or rudeness, but stay civil. When someone won't cooperate, Just be very clear on what support you are and you are not willing to offer. Here's another win-win challenge. Your child's behavior has been completely unacceptable. You've taken matters in hand and severely limited how much time he can spend on gaming each week. His unhealthy preoccupation seemed to be the only way he was relating to his friends. And now he's surly and he swears at you whenever you ask him to do anything. But he's asked if he can have a friend over. Will you ban that too until his behaviour improves? Well, you may. But his need for friendships is very real and a far healthier version of it than his addiction to gaming. Perhaps in the interests of better relations and supporting his underlying needs, you'll allow the visit. So the skill here is to support underlying needs, even when behaviour is extremely inappropriate. Another challenge. You've ended up in an uncomfortable stalemate with your partner, perhaps, because you can't agree where to go on the next holiday, or you strongly disagree with a workmate on how to proceed with a work strategy. And the skill here is keep communicating. Even if you have to drop the issue for a while, don't freeze the other person out. Just keep talking on other matters, even if you can't talk about the conflict itself. Of course, sometimes another person you've disagreed with refuses to communicate further with you at all, and then there's very little you can do about the situation. Well, you might be able to send them a card or a text at Christmas or for their birthday. And of course, that's not going to fix the problem, but it's sending a message. My door is open to you. If they reach out in any way, try to respond, even if the argument isn't solved. Holding on to grudges helps no one, and especially not you. Resolving conflict is sometimes lengthy, and it may need perseverance. Grudge or no grudge, there are certain times when it's wiser to back off. If it's a negotiation, it's your right to say no deal in these circumstances. You may feel the other person's being very self-serving, or they're not playing fair, or abusing your rights. You have to know when to walk away. You will almost certainly need to cut off the relationship if there's violence or the possibility of it involved. Sometimes it takes great strength to walk away. Weigh up your motives first. Does the desire to walk away come from excessive pride, or is it necessary for self-respect and safety? The collaborative win-win approach, used consistently and early in a conflict, will generally keep you away from these extremes we've just been discussing. Of course, the end result is important, but it's during the process that the real benefits appear. Cooperation, mutual respect, better options, commitment, and goodwill. Here's a summary. Fight, flight, or freeze are primitive survival reactions that generally won't serve us well, unless we're being stalked by a tiger. We need to choose to respond. Take a moment to get centered and then flow with the situation so that we can skillfully navigate the way through. Set your course with a win-win strategy and start with these four steps. Move off your position, explore everyone's needs, create new options where ideally everyone gets more of what they need, and do it together. Make it clear that you're partners, not opponents. So drop your oppositional language. Replace your but with an and. No matter what win-win challenges you face, don't switch to win-lose. You may need to emphasize shared goals and be very creative in responding to everyone's needs. You may need to redefine what a positive outcome actually is for you. And if the situation demands competition, use it as your incentive to bring out your personal best. Support underlying needs even when the behavior is extremely inappropriate. And generally speaking, keep communicating. But you may have to reassess and decide whether this time it's wiser to walk away. Conflict is a journey, and almost always the best way to travel is with a collaborative approach. For the win-win approach to be our go-to choice, we need to develop new skills, and not just those we've mentioned already, but a whole toolkit of them. Let's have a quick look at where this series is heading. Each audio will introduce you to another tool to add to your toolkit and strengthen your skills. We've taken the theory and turned it into everyday language. We've extracted all that really does make a difference when a difficult conversation is right in your face, or you want to manage your relationships better than you have been. Okay, what's in this toolkit? Here's a brief rundown of the 12 skills. And the questions to ask yourself so that you actually engage with the skill. Skill number one, win-win, makes us partners, not opponents. Ask yourself these questions to engage win-win. What needs underlie our positions on this issue? How can we solve this as partners, not opponents? That's the skill we've just dealt with in this session. Skill number two, creative response to conflict, asks, what must I do to respond, not react? And what opportunities can this situation bring? Skill number three, empathy. In the first part of this, we'll look at how can I open up communication? What are they trying to say? And in the second part, we move to how can I get past my reactions to allow for their personal style or their differing values. The fourth skill, appropriate assertiveness, answers the question, how can I express myself so that I'll be really heard and understood? Skill number five, cooperative power. What steers us to use power with each other rather than power over? How do we move beyond disempowering relationships and behaviours? Skill number six, managing emotions, discovers what message is my feeling delivering to me? How can I use it as my fire for positive change? How will I best manage my own and other people's strong emotions? And skill number seven, with a willingness to resolve, I'm ready to move beyond personal issues and towards forgiveness. What feelings or personal problems do I need to release? So that's the first part of the bag. It's the personal skills. And then it's time to put them into a strategy. With skill number eight, mapping the conflict, we make a map of the situation to give us greater clarity and to point the way. With skill number nine, designing options, we develop creative options together. And the 10th is negotiation, where we find we can be hard on the problem, but soft on the people at the same time. Skill number 11 is called introduction to mediation. It's an introduction only, as mediation is its own professional field, but we have a good look at when other people are in conflict and ask, how can I be helpful and skillful, but still stay neutral? Finally, the 12th skill, broadening perspectives, deals with putting this issue into the big perspective. Am I including heart as well as intellect? And how do I live with these skills in the wider world? This toolkit's also a great starting point if you're writing a speech that you want to present in conflict-resolving mode. It'll stimulate you to ask the right questions. As you've just heard about with Win-Win, these skills transfer very readily to widely differing contexts. And in choosing our examples and our stories, we've used a variety of them. And we've done that on purpose so that you can see how readily these skills transfer. Well, yes, there are some adaptations that are needed to fit particular cultures, but the fundamental principles hold true. The skills that you'd teach a young child are basically the same ones needed by an international diplomat. One morning you'll pull out a tool for a problem over breakfast and find yourself needing it again at a difficult business meeting that afternoon. If you'd like to have transcripts of these audios or extra study material, do visit our website at conflictresolutionnetwork.org or just type crnhq.org. There's an online course and lots of teaching material that you can download there for management or communication studies or professional development, anywhere where resolving conflict well is key to the job. It's always the same toolkit of skills, whether for personal, workplace, or international effectiveness, just massage to fit the people. So join us again for skill number 2, to inspire you to use a more creative response to conflict.